On today's Domain Sherpa Review, we have three professional brokers on the panel. Some interesting concepts are discussed, including the ideal time to introduce the idea of a payment plan to a buyer, some benefits of a payment plan, but to buyer, to seller, and to broker that you may never have considered before. They also discuss an anti-disparagement clause in domain acquisition contracts that's really fascinating and I think would be great for the industry. Listen to the show. There are lots of little gems here and there and a lot of fun the whole way along. Enjoy. Hey, Sherpa Network, thanks for joining us. I'm Tess Diaz, executive producer of DomainSherpa.com, and today we're doing the Domain Sherpa Review. This is the show where we get into the minds of successful domain name investors using real examples so we can learn strategies and tactics to become better investors ourselves. We will have three segments to today's review. First, we'll discuss what the Sherpas recently bought or sold, with the other Sherpas guessing the prices. Next, we'll discuss in value an investor-submitted domain name portfolio. And finally, we'll preview some domains going to auction soon at namejet.com and whether the Sherpas think they're a good investment opportunity for you. Today, we are delighted to have one OG Sherpa and two brand new Sherpas. Drew Rosner, Media Options. Hello, how you doing?
Doing great.
Good to have
you back after a couple weeks absence.
Yeah, we missed you and your familiar face. Bill Sweetman, you are a very familiar face. We are totally shocked that this is your first time on the Sherpa Review panel. So Bill is founder of Name Ninja Domain Buyer Brokerage. Bill, you are such a great host and friendly person that you frequently do quite a bit at the different domain conferences, right?
That's right. I have been one of the moderators of NamesCon. I think this past January was my sixth year doing that.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, you know everybody, and you belong here on this panel because not only are you great at moderating, you have so much knowledge from your years with your buyer brokerage firm as well. And Brian Harbin, welcome for the first time on Domain Sherpa. Brian is broker at gritbrokerage.com. Brian, I love the connotation of grit brokerage and the shout out to the South. You're joining us from Florida today.
That's right, Jacksonville, Florida. So definitely appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, delighted to have you. Brian, we've really appreciated getting to know you over the last few years. How long have you been brokering domain names?
Yeah, so it would have been the summer of 2014. So coming up on 5 years.
Yep. Okay, yeah. And you've really made some waves, made a good splash here in the industry. And it is very good to have you stepping up where you belong with the Sherpas. So welcome to each of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we thought we'd take it easy on you and have Drew go first. When we jump in here, the first segment of our show is What's New Sherpas? So we're going to discuss one purchase or sale that you've made over the past few weeks. The purpose of this is to discuss the market a little bit, to have some fun with each other, and also for our listeners, the Sherpa Network, they get to learn a little bit of how different brokers see domains, domain name values, and the market right now a little differently and why. So Drew, tell us a name that you have purchased or sold in the last few weeks, but don't tell us the price.
So I'm going to switch it up. I almost 100% of the time talk about domain. Actually, I think the last time I was on, I talked about a sale as well. We just sold a name. It was a name that we owned. And so I feel comfortable talking about it. There was no NDA involved. And I think it was a good price for the name. And it was a very quick turnaround. So that's why I'm going to talk about that instead of a purchase.
Good info. Accept the hint.
No, there's no hint.
But they're not new to this. They don't need any hints, Drew.
I'm a black box in a variable. Nobody, it doesn't hint anything to anybody. Immutable.com. Immutable. 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 Definition
sounds like
is,
a spelling bee.
Is, you can't, yeah, kind of. You can't, you know, can't be manipulated, edited. It's written in stone.
All it's, right.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay. And this was a sale. So a Media Options owned domain that correct. You sold.
Correct.
Okay. So Bill and Brian, duke it out. Who wants to guess first what he sold it for?
I'll take a shot at that. So my thinking is, you know, oneword.com, lots of syllables, very obscure word. In fact, thank you for explaining what the word meant. I'm sure it probably has a Latin origin. But kind of unusual and has a bold nature to it. Now, I also have to think of the fact that it came from your portfolio, Drew. So, you know, you negotiate hard, but you also, you know, you're not unrealistic. And so you will sell your names. I've had the privilege of buying at least a couple of names from you for clients. So my sense there is you would have agreed to sell that for $75,000.
Okay, good guess. And Bill, thank you. That's exactly what we're looking for. Taking us through the thought process, because, you know, I know when you in particular, but when someone is buying a domain, they come and say, well, I kind of want it. You know, it's got to be one word, or it's got to be easy to spell, or I want it to connote this strength of character. And that's how domains are frequently acquired for branding purposes, right?
Yes, it usually my clients are often startups or serial entrepreneurs, and they typically they have a particular brand name in mind, which can be a problem because sometimes the .com can never be acquired.
Yeah,
and we'll talk a bit more about that later, but they've already usually put a lot of thought into what they think the brand should be, even if it's not possible to get the .com domain.
And then you can extrapolate from that, okay, this feeling, this length, this, you know, what ability in different languages, whatever it may be. All right, now, Brian, you have little, you're coming in with Bill already having said so much, and it's okay if you have a similar ideas or something different. What are your thoughts about immutable.com?
Well, it's definitely a great name. I mean, it's relevant, you know, with people don't want to be censored with what they say. So I think it's timely. My guess would be, you know, he said it's relatively a quick turnaround from when he bought it to when he sold it. So my guess would be probably paid, you know, maybe high four figures, maybe just into five figures. But I would think he might be willing to take a little bit less. I've heard Drew say before, focus on the margins, you know, and just getting some of your money back. So I think he might have taken about half of what Bill said. So my guess would be somewhere around 30K, maybe high 20s, low 30s.
Okay. All right. Fair guess. And, you know, names like this, it's difficult to have a real comparable sales set. Like, you know, it's the domain market is not quite like the real estate market, you know? So Drew,
I'm generally super, ever more so, because I used to support the idea of comparable sales, and I as a measure of value, and I used to even include comparable sales in, you know, like, we have like a premium domain evaluation that we offer. I reluctantly offer it, to be honest, because it takes a long time to actually do it. It's like a 9-page report that it's, I think it's $1,400 or $1,250 or something. And, you know, even though that might sound high to have your domain appraised, you know, it's usually, these are very usually, it's usually being done for like a high stakes deal, or it's being done because of a bankruptcy or an audit, or, you know. And so it's a very in-depth report that requires a lot of time to do it. And I used to include a whole page talking about, you know, an in-depth report of comparable sales. And I've eliminated that because I truly, truly believe that these are not commodities. You cannot compare one domain sale to another. And all of the information and data that you can extrapolate from a comparable domain sale is completely 100% subjective. There's very little objective data that can be taken from one domain sale and applied to another. The only thing that's objective is if you're talking about the same domain buyer or the same domain seller, you can extrapolate whether or not they undersold, oversold. If there's any insight into how long that negotiation protracted, you can extrapolate some information there. But otherwise, I am ever more firmly against comparable domain sales. Just wanted to make that point.
And the your point about the buyer and the type of buyer that's buying the domain or any domain, that is so key to the to the perceived value and what, for how much and if it will actually turn into a transaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Good point. Yeah. All right, Drew.
So, all right. Drum roll. So, you're both wrong. I sold it for $100,000 even.
Wow.
And it was I had priced it at $150,000, and it was a multi-week negotiation. And it was interesting because I was actually quite rude to the buyer because they just kept coming back at like $3,000, $5,000, $7,000. And it was like, look, you're not moving the needle here. And I actually started raising the price. I was like, look, honestly, you're wasting my time. And I'm going to start charging you for my time. And because I just didn't like the way that the guy was negotiating. And so he very intelligently introduced me to his partner or boss or I don't know who it is. And was like, look, I'm going to let him take it from here. And then that guy was very straightforward and we very quickly, you know, came to a deal. And, things started moving in the right direction. And so that goes to show you that who's involved is really essential, not just to the price outcome, but to the success of the deal. Because egos and personalities, my own and the buyer's, I'm working on that, can very often get in the way of a successful transaction. When I refer to my own ego, I am very cognizant of the fact that when I'm negotiating a transaction for a domain that we actually own, my ego can oftentimes become a hurdle. It can get in the way, it can disrupt the flow of the deal, it can be susceptible to my mood and other factors that are going on in my day in life.
Well, and whereas you're not really a motivated seller either.
Yeah, that doesn't help. That doesn't help. It gives me a little bit of, arrogance. However, when I'm selling or buying for a third party, it's amazing how that just isn't there. And so more and more, I'm letting others negotiate the sale of names that we own. But it depends on the circumstances.
Well, that really...
I actually think, you know, as a domain broker, I think that's a pretty relevant point, which I think is what you were going to say. It's like, you know, you're better off, I don't care how smart you are, I don't care how experienced you are, if you own the asset or you are the one who wants to buy the asset, there are emotions and intangibles involved that can and most likely will at some point disrupt the deal.
And that's what I was going to chime in on is you really speak to the importance of having a trusted, somewhat neutral intermediary, whether you're absolutely on the buyer sell side, because I typically represent buyers and sometimes their thoughts, their assumptions about the domain owner, the way they even, you know, talk negatively about the domain owner because they don't understand. Little known fact. All my clients are under contract and I have a clause in my buyer brokerage contract with my buyer clients that they cannot disparage the domain owner. They cannot call them a cyber squatter later because it's my reputation. I'm the one interacting with the domain owner, and I don't want the legitimate domain owners to be abused or, you know, maligned by my buyer clients. So I make my clients agree, don't slam these legitimate domain owners and domainers.
That's a great point, especially when they issue their press release or something, you know, that you're looking at the development of the whole industry, not just today's deal. Good for you.
That's great. It really is a great point. There was a deal recently, not my deal. I just remember reading about it. I think it was somebody that put out the story on Reddit, or it was a good domain acquisition that maybe happened a year or two ago. I forget who wrote about it or what company it was. It was a good name though. And in the story, it was a great story, you know, play by play of how the whole thing went down over a period of years. But he was very disparaging towards the domain owner, even though as somebody in the industry, as I'm reading, I'm like, he didn't do anything wrong. The guy was totally cool. In fact, I think he was calm, cool, and collected with the whole negotiation. But here's this guy calling him a cyber squatter or a, you know, domain squatter or whatever the term he used was. So I like that. I like that clause.
Yeah, that's really fabulous. And I know over the years, there's been so much talk about maybe someday having a domain brokerage, you know, certification or a some kind of association. And I don't know if that'll ever come to be, but if it is, I think that would be a great thing for every certified broker to include, don't you? That'd make a difference, you know? Okay, so.
Hey, Tess, one thing I was gonna mention on that is, it's interesting how people come into negotiation and with a very specific technique. Like there's an attorney that was looking to buy a domain and came in with a $7,500 offer. And because we took 2 hours to get back to him, he says, well, my offer is now decreased to $5,000. And so right off the bat, he's telling us the type of, you know, negotiation tactics that he wants to use. And I think sometimes as brokers, it's great because we help kind of insulate those responses because, you know, clearly, you know, a seller's going to get on defense mode and then there's just going to be no collaboration at that point. So I think it's very important in those type of situations to have a broker that can come in and be like, all right, calm down over here. We'll get your response. It might take a little bit of time, but hey, let's, but yeah, it's funny how people come in with these very specific techniques of like, you know, you never know who's on the other side of that email. You just have to be very delicate at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes the biggest egos have the biggest pocketbooks. It's not always about
more often than not, in fact.
And that's why sometimes the deal happens through co-brokerage relationship, because I've worked with Brian on acquiring domains. He was the seller broker, I was the buyer broker, and I'm pretty sure Drew, we've done that. I know I've bought names directly from you, but I think we've done the co-brokerage thing as well. So hey, it whatever gets the job done.
Yeah. And I know, you know, Brian too, I know there've been a lot of discussions on co-brokerage there. I think that's a big deal to know that brokers in this industry talk to each other, work together, especially if someone is watching this show, who is looking into acquiring a domain or trying to figure out if they need a broker. There's a lot to be learned, through this process. Okay. So immutable.com. Fantastic sale. That is a really good price for it.
I'm gonna just provide a little bit more detail. And I'm sorry to, you know, hog the microphone here, but as I think George Bush said to George Bush Senior. It was in one of the debates, and he said, I think it was George. No, I don't remember who it was. But it's a great quote. He said, I paid for this microphone. Thank you very much. we paid $20,000 for a package that included immutable.com, immutability.com, and immutable.net. And you know, which I thought at the time was a good deal. I didn't think that it was really a steal, but I was like, you know, immutable is a very applicable term to blockchain. It's something that's used specifically to identify probably the greatest advantage of a blockchain, which is it's in it can't be manipulated. There's no way to change historical transactions. It's a permanent ledger that cannot be manipulated in any way, good or bad. And so that is called that is immutability. And if something is immutable, it is cannot be manipulated. And so I liked it because I just thought it was a, you know, it's really a defining characteristic of a very fast growing industry, even if it's tough to spell. And I was never familiar with the term until I got interested in blockchain. And so, I think the multiple syllable difficulty to spell, you know, brought it down from being, you know, probably a 250 to 350 name. And I think, yeah, I think we got I think we got pretty much all of it at $100,000. I think.
And did you sell it to a crypto related company?
I believe so. I couldn't find a lot about these guys, but the limited stuff I could find tied them to a cryptocurrency related company.
Yeah, congrats on that deal. I'm happy that I was wrong and that you sold it above what I thought you might have sold it for. So that's a great. Unless, of course, I was the buyer. Then I'm.
Well, and I think, you know, it's not really about being, you know, quote unquote wrong about a price so much as thinking through what it might be used for. What, you know, it's the process is more interesting. And the guessing just adds a little fun. So you were right, I think, both of you about the processes. And Brian, what you said about censorship really jumped out to me. I hadn't thought about it in that end. But that's something too, you know, blockchain is such a new industry and so much, you know, it's going to be around a long time, but who knows who the major players are going to all turn out to be. But there's always, you know, censorship is going to be around forever, unfortunately. And I think, you know, with privacy, all the laws surrounding these different areas of freedom of speech, that's a great thing when you acquire a domain that there's some liquidity to sell it at some point. So very good point. Bill, you're up next. What's a domain you recently bought or sold?
So I'd mentioned it, as you know, pretty well every transaction I do as a buyer broker is under some kind of confidentiality clause. So I can't, and that's one of actually the most frustrating parts of my job is that I don't get to talk about the interesting transactions that get to happen. So, but what I am going to share with you is the deal that's in, it's in escrow right now. It's a oneword.com. And I want to give you a little bit of the history on how that deal came to be, but I can't tell you the name. I can tell you the price though. So, but the backstory is, I worked with a client in Europe about, starting about 2 years ago, and they were doing a global expansion. So they wanted to migrate off their country code name to get the .com. And so I worked on that project and that's not the project. The transaction is in escrow right now, but that was the first project. And that was a wild and crazy project. But they came to me about 3 or 4 months ago. They're doing kind of a spin-off venture. And they came to me and said, hey, we're doing a spin-off venture and there's this oneword.com that we're interested in. Can you look into it and let us know if it might be acquired or acquirable? So I took a quick look at the name and it's like, okay, really good oneword.com owned by a tech entrepreneur. He's owned it, you know, 10, 15 years. And I said to the client, you know, I really don't think it's not listed for sale anywhere. Like this guy, he doesn't need the money. He's going to be very reluctant to sell it. He's using it for email. But, you know, if you want me to take a shot, I will. And the clients, and I sort of said, I estimate you're looking at somewhere between 500,000 to over a million based on who owns the name, the quality of the name, et cetera, et cetera. So they engaged me to try to acquire that name and I made contact with the owner. We had a really good dialogue. He's very professional. Long story short, I was right. he wouldn't sell it for less than $1 million+. And I conveyed that back to my client. And my client was like, well, we're going to have to find a different name. So I said to the client, well, let me know kind of about the project you're working on. Maybe I can suggest some names to you that you can get for within your budget. Their budget was, you know, maybe up to $500,000. And they, I knew they wanted a oneword.com. So they went off. They didn't take me up on my offer. They went off. And the clock is ticking here, right? Because they want to launch their new project, I think, this fall. So they came back to me with this invented word name that was really terrible. And because they sort of said, hey, do you think this is acquirable? So I kind of looked at that invented word name and it's like, yeah, actually, you could acquire this name, but I really don't think you should acquire this name. And I explained why. It was just like it failed the radio test. It just was just a horrible name. And also, I said, you know, you're going to overpay for this name because based on who owns it, you're probably going to have to pay $50,000 to $100,000 for it. And it's the kind of name that if it was on Brand Bucket, it'd be like $5,000. So it's kind of like, I just don't like this name. You overpay. Thankfully, my client didn't mind me being candid like that. And so I said, here, look, you guys are on a timeline. Let's do this the right way. How about you tell me what the nature of your new project is? I'll take a look at what good oneword.coms are currently on the market. I'll curate a list of recommended potential brand names for you. And then you take a look at that curated list and maybe you'll see something on there that'll pop for you. And then we can just go and get it because the name should be able to be acquired for within your budget within a couple of weeks. So they actually said yes to that. And I have to tell you, that happens so few times. Like, that's how it should always be done, but it rarely ever happens. So they agreed. I went off. I looked at 300 names, and I looked at names that were represented by Media Options and were represented by other brokers and brokerages I know. These are all names that, you know, I knew were on the market. And I curated it down to 32 recommendations for the client. These were names that I thought might be suitable for their new venture. I sent them the list and they got back to me within a few days and they particularly liked one of the names. So I was like, great, they actually, we're making progress here. So then I took a look at that name and this is where it was really interesting. In the back of my mind, that name seemed familiar to me. And the reason it seemed familiar is it was owned, I knew a guy in Toronto and he owned that domain name about 15, 20 years ago. So the first thing I did was, well, I was curious to say, okay, which broker represented it? And when I looked a bit closer, I realized, oh, okay, that guy in Toronto, he doesn't own the domain anymore. And I actually saw that what happened is he had sold it to a domainer. That domainer, I think, had tried to sell it through Media Options about 5 or 6 years ago. So Media Options was representing it 5 or 6 years ago. It was then acquired by somebody else and maybe even acquired by somebody else. And now it was being repped by another brokerage, not Media Options. So I spoke to the new brokers, and we worked out a co-brokerage arrangement and the deal's in escrow now. And so my client, I think the asking price was, I think it was north of 600. And we finally agreed on a quick closure and my client's paying 450,000 for it. And then all the brokers are getting compensated. And the client's getting this amazing domain name. But I will say that what was interesting is I suspect the guy in Toronto sold it for less than 100,000. Because when Media Options was representing the newer owner, it was listed for between 100 and 150,000. So it's interesting how it changed hands over the years and has now potentially found a forever home by an end user at 450,000. And I still think my client got a good deal because I think it's a wonderful name and I'm very excited. I'm going to be so excited to see them put it to use.
That's a great example of how companies look at acquisitions and how domain brokers look at acquisitions. Because the branding process for the, you know, history of time has had nothing to do with availability beyond you know, there being no IP conflict. And it's just not like that anymore. And interesting to see as you go through the process and see it going from home to home, recognizing, you know, that's going to affect your acquisition strategy, the offers you make, what you're guessing the pricing would be. It takes a lot of research to do all that.
Yeah, and I did, just to be clear, I did that research, the historical research, just as a bit of due diligence, not because I wanted to contact the current owner, because my whole philosophy is I knew about that domain name because it was provided to me by one of, you know, a reputable brokerage firm. So there was no way in hell I was going to go direct to the domain owner. I would go through the seller brokerage because that's how I came to find out about the name. And so it becomes a win-win for everybody. And I actually don't know who the owner is, and I may find out one day. I don't think it's you, Drew, though. I don't think you ever owned this name, unfortunately.
Now, that's a really neat story. And I think I'm seeing a little theme here develop as we talk of the importance of a broker. Again, because what you researched, some of it is just historic knowledge. You remember from, did you say 20 years ago?
How many? Yeah, this guy, he had hand registered it because he had a technology firm, and he used it for that. And it's just weird because I remember meeting him at this early web, it was a Toronto Web Girls event, but it was open to men. And I remember, like, the first time I met him, and it's like, and I got his business card, I guess. And I was like, wow, you own that name? It's like, how'd you get that? So it's just too bad I didn't get to buy it from him, because that would have been really cool.
Yeah, that's really neat. But there's, you know, historic knowledge. There's, you know, the different tools that we use to research who owns domains. There are also the, I don't know whose phone is ringing, but then on top of that, there are the, you know, probably emails that you're researching from newsletters that other brokers have listed over the years. There's a ton that goes into it. So good for you. That's an excellent deal. Brian, you're up. What's a name you recently bought or sold?
All right, good deal. So yeah, I've got two. I'll kind of let you guys choose. So one of them is a oneword.com. So I don't know if you guys want me to share kind of some of what they've done, or I've got a oneword.co domain. So I guess if you guys have
which
a preference.
Which one's got more shock and awe? Showbiz, man. We need shock and awe.
All right, shock and awe. Let's just do the dot co then.
All right.
So yeah, there's one that we just sold. You know, a lady had reached out maybe a month and a half ago and, you know, came in. So anyways, the domain is, declare.co. Declare.co.
Declare.co. All right. Kind of powerful there. All right. Make a guess. Bill, Drew, what do you think?
So normally I probably would have said, hey, this is a sale, right?
Yeah.
You sold it.
Yeah, it's an escrow.
Okay. So normally I'd probably be like in the 5 to 9 grand range, I'd probably say. But because I've just said, you know, shock and awe, and he picked the .co, I'm going to overshoot that a bit. I'm going to say $18,000.
Okay. All right. Good poker face, Brian. Bill, what do you think? Declare.co sold for?
So I'm glad we're talking about a oneword.co, because a lot of my clients are startups. A lot of times they want a oneword.com, and then I give them the reality check about what that would actually cost them. And they often will then bring up the topic of a .co. And I like that they bring up the topic of a .co, because .co's are very popular with startups, and it's a great extension. So I bought a lot of .co's, including some through Brian. So I would say on that one, I like that one. I would say using the shock and awe thing, I'm going to go the other way. I think maybe that sold for 65,000. Normally I would go, I would say more between 40 and 50, but I'll say 65 is my shock and awe guess on that one.
Wow. All right. That's a high guess, Bill.
You set the watermark high.
Yeah. So Brian, you can spit out the price right away or you can make them work for it. We want to hear a little bit about the negotiation process. So you pick, tell us what you want.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it wasn't really a shock and awe type deal. It's actually kind of more, and we've got, you know, a couple other .co domains in escrow right now in the same price range. So, but yeah, there was one other reason I wanted to share this. So it's in escrow right now. It's a payment plan, right? So it's at, 22.5, so 22,500. And I thought, you know, what was interesting about it is the fact that, you know, she'd come in with best and final all cash, because a lot of buyers come in with the mentality of all cash. And I think she was somewhere around that 10 to 11, 12,000 mark. And, you know, I think it's just important to introduce to that point. I don't think introducing payment plan is a smart thing to do too early on, because then it kind of muddies the water and there's gets people too distracted. But, you know, once she was at that best and final, then we introduced the payment plan, was able to stretch it out over 18 months. And what I like about payment plans is, you know, first of all, obviously the sale price is going to be higher. Second of all, you know, it's consistent cash flow for the seller, the broker. It helps the buyer spread it out. Yeah, they can start using the domain right off the bat. And the other thing I like about it as a broker is it keeps me in contact now with these buyers for the next 18 months. And I can't tell you, you know, when I do a one-shot deal with buyers or sellers, you don't really have a chance to kind of build that relationship with them. But, you know, as a matter of fact, they were emailing this morning, they're trying to get the redirect and the server names. And so when I'm automatic and responsive, it's just now I'm almost kind of representing both people, if that makes sense. So that's what I really like about him. And the oneword.com was the same thing. His top offer was half of what we were able to get out of the payment plan and been able to develop a great relationship with them as well. So I think the two things with that would just be, you know, don't introduce it too early, but then second of all, think about the long-term benefits to all parties involved and having a consistent cash flow for the sellers. You know, of course it's risk-free because if the buyers stop paying, they keep the payments and the domain. So I think it's just a win-win for everybody. You don't get credit with escrow.com for the top 10 at the end of the year for payment plans, but hey, it's a win-win in all other situations.
Brian, did you?
I'm not sure if that's true. I think you get credit for payments made. For payments made. I'm not sure, actually. I don't know. They account for it. I know it's accounted for. I'm just not sure when it's accounted for. I don't know. You know, when the final payment gets made, if that's when they account for it, or if it's
accounted for
as, you know, payments made. Because sometimes these things have big deposits up front. I don't know. That's a good question.
I like that Drew goes straight to the competition aspect. Bill, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to ask Brian, well, congrats on the sale. Also wanted to find out who brought up the topic of payment plan, buyer or you as the broker?
Yeah, usually the buyers rarely, if ever, bring that up. So it's something that I'll introduce. And having researched who she was a little bit, I knew that she was well-versed and educated, you know, buyer from that standpoint. So that's always helpful to know in terms of how much information they're going to need to justify the price that we're asking. So
nice.
I find that a lot of my clients aren't even aware that that might be a possibility, that a payment plan might be a possibility with a domain owner. So it's, I certainly encourage domainers that if they're comfortable with offering that kind of model to, at some point during negotiations, let the buyer know it's a possibility, because sometimes that what takes you across the finish line.
And Brian, so, I'm wondering, you know, you said right after she offered best and final, I'm betting that's not always your mark of when to introduce it. What factors do you consider when deciding the timing for proposing a payment plan?
Well, you know, first of all, and this is probably similar to Bill and Drew, I mean, in a perfect situation, I want to talk to them on the phone, right? I want to, especially when I give that first price, I really don't even want to quote a price unless I can get them on the phone. And you're still going to have people that just refuse. And then the next best scenario is once I have spoken to them on the phone, texting is always the best, just because you're getting immediate responses, you know, they're getting it. And it's just going to make for a more efficient process all the way through if you guys are texting, and you've already spoken on the phone and have that relationship. So I think, first of all, if I can get them on the phone, kind of feel them out, see where they're at in terms of price. And then it allows me to be able to ask some follow-up questions to kind of test the waters to see if it's even going to make a difference. Because for some people, they don't even care. So you don't want to spend, you know, 3 or 4 emails talking about a payment plan when, you know, you can tell by the tone of their voice whether or not that's even important or not. So I think it's just really being able to talk to them on the phone, feel them out, you know, what's their tone, how quick are they? Are they, you know, are they warm and friendly? You know, you just kind of need to know a little bit more of a complete picture as far as the person that you're talking to and the situation.
That's really insightful, Brian. Thank you. That's a good point. Yeah. Thank you guys.
I just quick comment. So 100% spot on. I actually do think that is the ideal point in time to bring up a payment plan. So when somebody comes in and says, look, best and final offer, they've already sort of wrapped their mind around this acquisition emotionally. And if you come back in a very polite and clear with minimal words and just say, super grateful for your offer. It's a strong offer. Unfortunately, it's a bit shy of, you know, where we need to be. How about if we, you know, how about if you pay that much up front and, you know, whatever X amount per month and the balloon at the end, or there's a million different ways to structure these things, but some variation of what they've offered with an extension that should be easily manageable relative to the size of the company, the growth of the company, whatever you know about the company, right? Formatting it with some personalization to what you believe the needs of this company will be, make them a very fair, polite counteroffer that kind of ignores the fact that they've made you this best